Accession number 30063, reel number 4.
Mr. Reed, reel 4. What time was Reveille in Darlington?
I think it was about 7 o'clock, Reveille. Because bear in mind that we had to make up our own beds, leave them folded, tidy, with a ground sheet there covering it, and everything else. By the time we had washed things, I didn't shave, I was too young. But by the time it had washed, it was getting on for breakfast time. When did you see breakfast? 9 o'clock parade. Wherever you're going to, whatever you're doing, 9 o'clock parade.
That was your breakfast parade, was it?
That was breakfast parade. And then you would find out what you're going to do during the day.
What did you get for breakfast? What food were they giving you?
Oh, you got your bacon, you got sausage. You did get an egg occasionally. It was satisfactory.
Porridge
was there. Well, I think the reason I've forgotten it is because I never eat it. So I don't eat porridge. Some of the lads did. They ate it all the time.
And what were the feeding utensils that the British soldier was using?
We had knife, fork and spoon, ours. And we had to keep that. We kept that. And when we finished the meal and got up, take your knife, fork and spoon with you and clean it and have it ready for lunch. That was always there. Not with the people who are catering.
Was it a cafeteria system? Was that the line
that was... Yeah, you had to walk past the line and get it, that's right. And then put it down. And go back for more if you dare, sort of style. But it was very good, very good. We didn't have any problems with it. But inside the drill hall, it had to be every morning. They walked up the lines, there's two lines, right away up the drill hall. One line with a head and tail down there, the other one with a head and tail down there. And they walked up there, Sergeant on duty walked up and made sure that all their kit was probably placed, not just slung down anyway. Got to be right.
Do you remember how it was laid out? Did the inspection?
Just by four, probably the size of a pillow. And then what covered a multitude of sins was the greatcoat, folded up and planked on the top of them. But he would come along and say, buttons cleaned, you know. Although it didn't last so long, that. We were still very much amateurs playing as soldiers.
And was there a set pattern of layout?
Yeah, for the whole lot. It's got to be. Otherwise, we'd have been walking on other people's beds. So you've got to leave some room there for it. That was in the drill hall itself. An offshoot of there was where the sergeant's mess was, where they got the meals, where the officers were, although there was only about three or four of them, I think, altogether, where they got the meals. And that was good.
If you lost good. Any equipment that you'd been given, what was the procedure then?
Supposed to pay for it and get it. Although I can't ever recall anybody losing any equipment. And I can't ever recall anybody who has lost any equipment and paying for it to buy it back again.
What was your first pay as a private soldier?
I think it was 10 bob.
And did they take off barrack room damages at all? Was that taken?
No. No, there was nothing like that. Nothing like that.
Had you made an allowance for home? Had you sent an allowance of your money for home?
I think they did, I'm not quite sure. I think I made 5 bob or 7 bob, I'm not quite sure. But I can't recall it at all. And if I did, it went right the way through with the whole of the service. But it was obviously enough to get by on me because I was happy about it. So I don't know.
You'd have breakfast and then you'd have this layout.
Breakfast and layout. Well, that's got to be laid out before breakfast. and then you're ready for the day's work. More often than not, it would be Morse practice, and that was held in another building around just across the road from Lordsfield Street. I think it was a church school or something, and we used to spend the morning there on Morse and sending messages and things like that. We're growing up now, you know, and we're growing up into something like a soldier. We're growing up to take notice of things, to do things, to make sure other people were aware and they did it, you know, whatever. So things were becoming just about right. Oh, the other thing was, I don't know whether you want to touch this later, was driving.
Yeah, we'll come to that later. I want to stick to the actual training early days of the war now, yeah, which we've moved to, and doing that. What about when you did go out at night at the end of the working day? Your appearance must have been important.
We went out in uniform. We were always told we had to wear our hats. We had to be neat and tidy. And I suppose with it being near home, with the majority of them being near home, we had to be careful what we were doing, whatever, making a row, having a fight, because there was fights going on. And that was the way it went up. And we all got away in the afternoon after having had the morning and lunch. Lunch was always a good meal.
What time would that be?
12:30, 1:00.
And you, what meal would you get? I think you might have touched on it, actually.
There certainly would be cheese around. There would be some biscuits around. There would be a pot of tea. When I say a pot, a big cup of tea.
Your main meal, of course.
Yeah. And that main meal was always roast potatoes, large potatoes, vegetables and meat. Might be chicken. Certainly, they were mad on roast beef, and the other one was lamb. And those were the three main ones you used to get for main meals. Finish that, but again, you could put your bed out now after the main meal, after 7:00. You could lay the bed out, ready to use. And just, as I said before, lie on one blanket over you, and your overcoat for a pillow.
Did the officers come round on your main meal to ask any complaints?
Occasionally, oh yes. They were there and wondering and asking and inspecting the cookhouse, but our marvellous cookhouse, you know, it was all well done. And
if you had a complaint, did they listen to it?
You know, I can't even remember.
I doubt it. Many people did complain.
I would doubt it. Well, as I said before, there used to be four or five or six, or maybe eight of us, and off we always went back for more. And sometimes a great big second plate would eat that. So we were growing up in that respect and putting a bit of beef on in another respect, you know.
And after the main meal, then, during the afternoon, what might you be doing?
Might go on a route march. Strange enough, shouldn't be done, but it used to be done. That would probably be it. Maybe on physical training, game of football, running around, and you get the PT instructor. And he was a devil, you know. He was fit, and he was good, he was muscular.
Do you remember his name, man?
I can see him now. There.
That's no problem.
No, I can't.
What was physical training? What kind of exercises were you put through?
Knees bend, arms swinging, you know, sticking out. All the muscles were done. Touching your toes.
I think a form of what they call Swedish drill.
Possibly, yeah. Never heard of that. But that's what it was. We used to go down to the football ground at Cheatham's. And we used to do our doings there. wish to do our exercises there, the whole lot, in the night, with shorts on, and all in a line, the whole, and they were very good. Some of them couldn't care less about doing it, you know. But on the whole, they were very good. And they would be, it felt to me, to stand outside and show them what to do, sort of stuff. And they'd say, yeah, and you know, the rib. But that was just all in a day's enjoyment, if you like. And at night, well, in the afternoons, we all want to go in for showers.
And were those in the drill hall, the showers?
In the drill hall, yes, yeah. But there wasn't enough to go around everybody, you know. There used to be a mad dash for them. And in the evening, we used to get the evening meal.
What might the evening meal be?
Lots and lots of biscuits. Lots of biscuits and lots of cheese and then cake, and it's invariably a slab cake with a currency in it, the usual thing, you know, that, and that was enough. When you think about it now, couldn't bear to eat that much, couldn't contemplate eating that much, and we'd have two goes at the big one, you know.
Was there a nappy in the hall?
No, we didn't have a nappy. In fact, I couldn't remember whether there was a nappy in Darlington or not. I know that the WVRS were there, and Salvation Army, they were always there, and you could always get what you wanted, and the shops were right in the same street as drill hall. Well, there was adequate stuff there.
After you'd had the evening, you'd then been to the evening session. Did you have a period of time in the evening when you had to clean and blanco and bull yourself?
Not a period of time, but you had to have your kit clean. We didn't blanco. That was considered no way. But you had to be well presented. You know, if you like this sort of style and get that put straight. But in the evening after, I'm not sure whether it'd be 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, when that was relaxation time, and then you could get down and have a game of cards with them, or when I just play fiddle and things like this, you know, all in the drill hall, all around your bed.
Was there a lot of gambling?
No. Didn't have enough money to gamble.
But did the army frown on gambling as well amongst them?
Oh, I don't know. I never come across it. I didn't come across it at all. No.
So how many men would be in this area, close to, as you say, next to each other, sleeping and eating and everything else?
You had two lines. You had the drill hall main entrance. You had a wing there and a wing there, and you used to get two sleeping that way and two sleeping that way. Not there, was it? So you had two rows up there and two rows up there. And there would be something like about, I think, maybe about 150. Between 150, 200.
So a lot of people in one room.
It's a massive big place.
Did it cause any rifts between people living cheek to jowl like this?
I'm not quite sure. I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't aware of any real hard-fought scraps going on. There used to be a lot of joking about and shouting and telling them to get to sleep, sort of style, if they were messing around. But I can't recall any.
No bullying.
No bullying. No, I didn't see any of that. It was all straightforward stuff, you know.
At what time would lights out be?
I think they were out at half past ten. I think, if I can remember rightly. Certainly they were out earlier than later, I would think, in the drill itself. Because you couldn't have on the lights anyway, because we keep every bugger awake. So I must sort of say now that if the person came in late, he was told to keep quiet in no certain manner, you know, is to be held at loose. But generally, it worked all right. The thing is, you always, and I'm guilty of myself, you always hear people snoring. You never hear people when they're quiet and you go to sleep and you don't know they're there. But you always hear people when they're snoring. And that is me. And especially if they've been out, because some lads used to get money from home, sent to them. And they could afford to go out and have a pint. And if they went out and had a pint or two pints or whatever, they would then be snoring. And everybody would say, yeah, you know. So there was a certain amount of that going on. Inevitable when you've got a lot of blokes together, and especially if they've had a drink. Well, it's all going to happen there, you know. It's all going to happen. But generally, we didn't object to it.
So drunkenness itself was not a great problem?
No. It wasn't the problem at all.
Do you recall any of the names of the instructors in the drill hall that were you?
Ah, I got him. His name's called Bill Salmon. Bill Salmon was a PTI, physical training instructor, a sergeant, PTI, from the regular army, who came and joined our mob as an instructor, and he was responsible for getting the boys fit. And he was a real, you know, he didn't smoke then, which was something. Didn't smoke. And he was very, very good, Bill Salmon. And he was a young lad, and I remember all the sergeants and things used to take the mickey out of him, you know, because he was so big round the chest and big arms and shoulders. And when he did it properly, you know, with his PTI off, all this sort of business. He did it properly. And I often wondered, years and years afterwards, what happened to Bill Salmon, you know, because he was well liked. Well,
were there any other instructors, sergeants that you can recall in Darlington?
No. My father was there. Who else was there? Oh, I know. I can see the face in front of me now. Moody, I think, was there. And the other sergeants and other blokes were in the other drill halls with their troops, you know. So it was just taken for granted, like, the only time those met, the different squadrons, was when we were playing football or something like that.
How did the situation go with your father in the same drill hall?
He gave me hell. He gave me absolute hell. And he told me so. He said, I'm not going to be soft on you. I'm going to be worse on you than I am on anybody else. And he was there till the bitter end. At the bitter end, we all got ready to leave and we stood in the queue, and they came round and shook hands individually with each one of us. And he come round and said, "Hopefully you won't mind what you're doing." Yeah.
Still a soldier.
Yeah, yeah. So that was good. That was good. Yeah. And I don't know, I think he went to Harrogate then, and he went up to Scotland, and he stayed in Scotland for a good while.
You mentioned smoking earlier, and of course people did smoke a lot in those days. That mustn't have helped the atmosphere in the room at night when you were all together, if the people were smoking heavy.
Didn't take any notice of it, if it was there, and it must have been there. But didn't take any notice of it, because it was a very, very high place, that. There was lots of air, you know. And whether or not it had air extractors on or not, I don't know. I would think they had, because there was the big doors in at the front which could accept vehicles going in there. So there might have been, you know. I couldn't be sure on that. Couldn't be sure.
Could I ask you how your squadron was organised? You'd have a commanding officer, presumably.
Dudley Rennick.
And he was still a captain, was he?
Yeah.
And under officers under him, the junior officers?
Yes, there was two that I remember. One was the tall lad who was dead keen and wanted to do everything, and he was he must have been mother's boy coming out of it, you know, everything he said he wanted done, sort of style. That was the third one. I really can't remember him, but Dudley Renwick was the bloke, you know. You saw on the television, what's his name, when they have that programme, don't tell me.
Oh, Sergeant, the Mainwaring, Captain Mainwaring.
That was Dudley Renwick. That was Dudley Renwick.
So you've got your captain,
Two subs.
Two subs.
Yeah.
How was the unit then split? How was the squadron split?
We had it in sections, I think. We had it, they were responsible for these things. I don't think there was any great credence put on this at all, to have them form into three sections, because there was no sort of fighting between themselves, good or bad. It was still very much a training unit where everyone needs to be trained. It was no use sending 75% of good people out there who are trained and ready to go and everything else, and the other 25%, no matter what they did, couldn't get away with it. So it was still very much a big, big unit.
So the sections, were they split as per Morse code, linesmen, or what?
Yeah, the linesmen. The
specialists,
linesmen,
in other words.
Yes, they were all real specialists. When you talk about the linesmen, his job was purely and simply to put landlines in between the headquarters and Morse code. The radio operators, most important, that they had those to go in there. And what else did they have? I'm sure there was more, but I can't recall.
Do you remember in those early days the type of radios that you were working, well, probably not you, but others were working within the unit, training on?
Didn't have them.
You didn't have radios at that
time? Didn't have them, no. There was the shorts of equipment all around.
Were there telephone people as well, telephone exchange people, and trained in training?
No, they didn't have the only telephone exchange we saw, that I saw, was a place down in, oh dear, what's the name of it, a place away from the Dillon, not in Darlington, in another town further down on the coast. Forget the name of it now. It was a headquarters for something down there that'll come to me in a minute. And there was a colonel in there, and they used to have a little 6-bar exchange, and we were the man at the exchange. So I had three operators, and I had those as my team, and we used to use that as the exchange. And that was the only thing I saw of those. Forget that.
How long were you in Darlington?
If it started in 39, and we went to Darlington, say, say we went to Darlington in October, we would be at Darlington until the summer, the beginning of summer. What is that? October, November, December, January, February, March, April.
From May, 9 months.
About 8 or 9 months. Then the whole lot would woof, and that was the end of the drill hall, I think. As far as having troops inside was concerned, they were taking them away from the congested area, putting them on a boat and putting them away in the wherever they was going, to somewhere else.
Are we talking now around about Dunkirk time, which would be end of May, early June of 1940?
We were abroad when Dunkirk happened.
Oh, so you moved them, so we can come to that then. So having left Darlington, where did you go?
formed up with our tin hats on, full kit on, rifles on our shoulders, and we went off to, as we all thought, went off to either Africa, India, Ceylon, Australia, or Ceylon was that was the one, South Africa, on our way out to where are we going? We don't know, but we finished up going up the Red Sea, and you could only come to one solution there, that going up the Red Sea, we were going up to Egypt, and we've heard there's something going on in Egypt, so we better see what's going on.
Had you been issued with tropical kit in England?
Yes.
So you knew we were somewhere warm?
Well, it was all, that's why I just went through India, Ceylon, Australia, all these places, South Africa, they're all, that was, we knew.
What was the tropical kit they gave you?
Good, two tropical shirts, good, lovely. Proper pith helmet, but not the one, the ones that the policemen wear here. They used to have others, thick, very thick, it was a band round. Boots, gaiters, shorts, the whole lot.
Were they comfortable? Comfortable clothing, I mean.
Didn't wear them, they were all posted up, and we had them, we just put them in there.
So you didn't know what side you were
getting? No, we just give them. We didn't know where we're going. We knew we were going through the Atlantic, and we went straight across shooting for America, South America, and then turned around and shot straight away across to Brazil, and then from the town on the African coast.
Freetown. Can we now look at that journey? Because it's, here you're a lad that was born in Gateshead, and all of a sudden you're going out into the world. You know, how did you feel about going abroad at that time?
Great. Except that there was a bit of, call it worry if you like, behind there, after all the, because a load of blokes, 18 and 19, say 20, 25, they're all ribbing each other, you're all falling out in little groups, you've got little pals, you might have a row with someone. And that might happen, and all these little things, domestic things, happen. So, that was the way we went out there.